Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Guest today, Zach Cohen. Zach, it's really great to have you on. I really appreciate you being here. Can you just let us know, first of all, where you're calling in from and what you do for a living with Ruby Hibiscus?
I appreciate it. And thank you for having me. I'm calling in from the great state of Connecticut, here in Southern Connecticut, about an hour outside of New York City, where Ruby is based. And I am our VP of Ops and Finance.
That's amazing. And can you tell us a little bit about, you know, how you got started with this brand? I know we talked a little bit off the air. You've kind of been there since the beginning, since day one, even pre-revenue. So what got you interested and wanted to work with this brand? And can you tell me a little bit about what was like the major problem or thing you saw, you noticed out there in the market that you're trying to do a little bit differently with this brand?
Yeah, like you said, I've been with Ruby since day one of $0 in revenue when we launched. The way I got into it, so I've been a CPG guy my entire professional career. I've been in the industry now over a decade. So started at a sports nutrition company. It was called UCAN. It was an incredible product. It was invented for the founder's son, who had this rare genetic blood sugar disorder, and just loved the brand, loved the idea, and got started as an intern there and just learned my way through the ropes and drinking from the fire hose, as we like to say, building the airplane, whatever cliche you want to use, and kind of learned everything about operations and CPG. And the founder, Noah, and the CEO gave me a call one day and said, you want to help me help scale this company and help grow it from the operations side? And I said, how hard can beverage be? Famous last words, right? And we learned how difficult the industry is, but we've had an incredible time. And Noah's done such a great job building the brand and generating the sales, getting us indoors, and the rest is history. On the back end, I've taken care of a lot of the commercialization, the ops, the finance, logistics, and everything that goes into that.
You know, that's amazing. And I'm just curious, you know, what your kind of like go-to-market strategy was at that time, whether you're looking to get into wholesale first or whether you're trying to do a proof of concept selling online D2C first. Where'd you guys kind of start? And then also kind of walk me up to 2024 here, where you exist predominantly in either one of those channels.
Absolutely. So we got lucky off the bat. A lot of brands, especially in the natural space, spend their whole life cycle trying to get into Whole Foods. And from day one, we launched in 55 Northeast Whole Foods stores. So our playbook was simple. It was saying, let's dominate this Northeast region of Whole Foods. So right off the back, we were focused on wholesale and finding those key stores and doing as many demos as possible. And this was during right at the tail end of COVID. So demos weren't even allowed. We were one of the first brands back into store doing demos, just getting customer feedback. We call it liquid to lips, just getting as many customers to try it as possible, meeting store managers, merchandising, stocking out shelves ourselves. And that was the playbook. Fast forward now, we took that one region and said, let's replicate that. That one region turned into now five regions of Whole Foods, where we've built out smaller teams in those regions. But the playbook for us is still the same. It's win at Whole Foods at all costs, liquid to lips. And it's pretty simple when it comes down to it. So for the most part, we're really focused on Whole Foods and wholesale in general as our distribution expands based off of those points of distribution. And then we also have a D2C footprint focused on Amazon, which is where about 20% of our revenue comes from.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah. And I suppose thinking about this, especially in your D2C channel, what is kind of your like ideal customer look like? I know it's kind of hard to tell like who's really buying and rebuying when you're going through retail. You probably get some insights, but nothing like you do surely like on your D2C channel. So how do you kind of find your ideal customer as planned out like in 2024 here, as far as like demographic, psychographic, age? Do you have any insights into any of those things? And has any of that surprised you also?
No, for sure. And I come from a D2C background and I'm a data nerd. So we were getting so much data when I was in the D2C days. You were able to tell who your customer was, where he or she came from, their demographic, all that. In retail, it's a little bit more difficult. But we've been able to kind of mitigate against that by being in store as much as possible and demoing. We've done, I'm ashamed to say in some ways how much time I've spent in Whole Foods demoing at the store. So from there, we've kind of learned who our customer is, what they like. And, you know, we've been able to kind of get that D2C data almost and then have that translate back to Amazon. So we've learned at the store who our customer is. Generally, people that shop at Whole Foods in that demographic from 20 all the way to 50, and we've taken the information and then retargeted back on Amazon. So we've been pretty efficient, not have to spend a lot of advertising money up front learning that information. We've taken our feedback in store and then brought that to D2C. So we've kind of had a reverse cycle there, which is pretty interesting, but pretty effective.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I kind of find a lot of people that come on or other CPG founders on the podcast, and I kind of find a lot of success in both ways. Some people, a lot of them started right before COVID or right during COVID, where obviously like e-commerce and D2C was kind of all you could do at that time, or had to pivot to that if you were starting like 2019 time. And I do find a lot of like interesting stories where a lot of people do a proof of concept selling D2C first and have all that great data to be able to kind of have some leverage and a leg to stand on and having those retail relationships. But then it also obviously also works the other way too, where you do so much volume through your wholesale, that the name gets out there so much that people are obviously, you know, looking for the product. If you know, they don't have time to go to the grocery store, if it's on Amazon, it's just as easy, right? So what kind of feedback do you get when you do these demos in store from people when they are trying it there? Yeah,
everything from what they like, people that are overly blunt. I've had people tell me this is the greatest product ever. I use it because I have diabetes and it helps lower my blood pressure. We've had people say this is the worst thing ever tasted. You get a little bit of everything. But for the most part, the feedback as you do more and more gets really consistent. And you hear, you are able to build kind of an FAQ of what people are liking. So for example, we're a hibiscus-based product. If you know hibiscus, it's very tart. Our original product involved all those qualities. It's loaded with antioxidants. It's a very nutrient-dense drink. It's also a little bit tart. That tartness was slightly overpowering for the conventional consumer. So we lightened it up a little bit. We added a little bit more bubbles. And we found that our retention rate, our store data, was improving every time we added some of this feedback. So we were able to take those information also on the packaging side, what drew people's eyes to it. And because we're doing it ourselves, we get all the feedback we can get. And we train our employees as well to ask those questions, generate that. And we're able to kind of put it into a system. And like we said before, you're able to almost get that type of D2C data where we're cohorting these individuals. We're able to see what men are liking versus females and aggregate it all into one and innovate and improve the product.
You know, that's amazing. And when you think about your positioning, like in a place like Whole Foods, has anything changed along the way of like, you know, maybe where like original Whole Foods location or region was kind of placing it on shelves? And has any of that changed going forward? What do you kind of find from the data you can gather through that? Like, where are you performing the best on the shelves? I guess I'm curious.
That's a great question. And something we look really deeply in. So should come as no surprise that a beverage is going to do better in the cold space, in the cooler. And as you know, in beverage, there's only so much space to have. So our strategy has being in store and working alongside the store managers, working alongside the team leads, helping them stock out stuff, helping them reset during promos. And just through building those relationships, we've been able to, some instances, you know, go from the dry shelf, which was where we're planogrammed, also on the cooler, but you know, every store is different, and get an extra facing here. And it should come as no surprise again. It's pretty simple when you think about it. Cold shelf and eye level are going to do better 10 out of 10 times. So everyone's fighting for it, but you want cold shelf, eye placement. And then we even have data where we'll take pictures of every single store that we're in. And we're able to see that we do better in certain stores when we're next to certain SKUs, which has been really interesting data point.
Interesting.
So now when we go to our distributors, when we go to our merchandisers, or when we're in store ourselves, we say, hey, can you put us next to X brand instead of Y brand? Can you put us a level higher? And, you know, and then region by region, we get weekly data from Whole Foods. We see our store by store units per SKU per week, which is our main metric that we track. And you can see what SKUs are doing best in each region. So in the South, one of our sweeter SKUs tends to do better, while here in the Northeast, our unsweetened SKU tends to do better. So we try to position our sweeter SKUs in the South front and center, while vice versa up here. So we take all those different data points. Like I said, I'm a big data nerd, and the whole team, we're just very data centric, taking those numbers. And then we go on and do the fun part, which is just building those relationships in stores and getting the product on shelf.
Yeah, that's fascinating. All the things that go into, like, you know, placement on shelves. I mean, most people don't think about it until you get into like a, you know, a CPG brand. And then obviously it's everything, right? So I guess I'm curious, you know, when you were starting out and maybe like, you know, you had your first club, Whole Foods deal in a region. How did you go about having those conversations kind of more in the beginning where maybe you didn't have all the data like you have now, like years later? How do you approach those conversations with either the store managers or, you know, maybe the execs at these at Whole Foods to, you know, kind of have that conversation before maybe you have like all the leverage or a more longstanding relationship?
Yep. And in my opinion, that's the most frustrating part of retail is you don't have the crystal ball and you have to go out there. So for us, it was literally just going into store, building a Rolodex, so to speak, of the store managers, the team lead, who was, you know, the assistant team lead, and putting them into our makeshift Google Sheets CRM tool, memorizing names, going there and just building genuine relationship. There's 55 stores, I think it's 56 now in the Northeast. You can't hit them all, but there's 11 stores right in New York City, right in our backyard. We can hit every single one of those stores every single day. And just by showing up, just by saying hi, and just by being genuine and doing those things, a lot of it comes with it. You know, now some store managers are, you know, aren't going to be so receptive, but the ones that we can really strike relationship with, those are the ones we take advantage of. And those are the stores that we double and triple down on.
Yeah, that makes sense. To double and triple down on those. And then you can also go to those others that might not be as receptive and say like, hey, but look at the data from this store. Like, how much better it could be doing if you were to, you know, hear me out on this sort of thing. I think that's a dynamic that a lot of people early on kind of struggle with. It's something I hear from a lot of founders that are very early on in their CPG journey with their brands. And I think that's really good advice. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, with all the data that's out there and all the things you could do online, those genuine in-person relationships, now that we're kind of post-COVID times, are still one of the most important things. And you know, I think it's easy to forget those things when you just think about, you know, the data and all of your, like, you know, strategic points and all those things. But you know, those relationships matter more than anything if you're going to be big into wholesale. So I think it's really important for people to understand, for anybody listening. I think it's really good advice. And one question I always love to ask everybody that comes on the podcast, which is, if you go back to the beginning, obviously I know you were like technically a founder yourself, but I mean, clearly you kind of were. I mean, for all intents and purposes, you basically were. You know, if you go back to that time and you were still pre-revenue and getting things really off the ground, if you go back and give yourself one piece of advice, if you were to start again, what do you think that piece of advice would be?
Yeah, it kind of goes back to the simple four P's: product, price, place, promotion. And I think the most important piece of it is make a really, really good product. And then, you know, at the end of the day, there's a reason why Coke and Diet Coke and Pepsi dominate. They taste really good. They're at a good price. So find a way to make a really good product. Continually innovate it. Continually R&D it. Make it the best thing where 12 out of 12 people say, this is the greatest thing I've ever tasted. Because ultimately, that's what the consumer wants. It's a really good tasting product. You see nowadays where people are getting more ingredient focused, or people are getting more organic or whatever. Sustainability. People have different metrics for purchasing a product. But at the end of the day, the best tasting product in CPG and food and bev is going to win. So make a really, really good product. And if you don't make a really good product, have a really good competitive price. And I think it's as simple as that in many ways, which is focus on the product, focus on your messaging, focus on the end consumer.
Yeah, no, it's fair enough. And to your point, you know, people are obviously very much concerned today with like understanding where the ingredients for things that they like are coming from, but also in like, you know, just general functionality of their food. So I know you mentioned some things about, you know, the hibiscus in and of itself has some benefits. How do you kind of take to doing that sort of like consumer education aspect to something where maybe some people might not be as familiar as like the benefits or what hibiscus even is? I mean, surely everybody's heard of hibiscus somewhere in tea or something like that. How do you kind of go about, you know, doing that? Obviously through your demos, I assume you would, but is there anything like you've taken to on your packaging? Like you have like QR code links to like information or any kind of channels like that?
Yeah, and that's another good piece of advice too, is education is very difficult to scale. Yeah. So if you have an education piece to it, it gets more and more difficult. So it's really simplifying the messaging. Hibiscus is one of the most antioxidant rich flowers in the entire world. It's loaded with vitamin C. It's loaded with electrolytes. It's used in every single continent throughout the world for different medicinal purposes, which is really interesting. That just took me 20 seconds to explain. You can't do that to every single customer that comes in. All you have is a little bit of a 6-inch diameter on a can and a dimly lit lighting shelf in Whole Foods to explain that to the customer. So for us, it's about really simplifying the message. And you'll see that a lot is leading with the flavor profiles, leading with the benefits, and trying to keep it as simple as possible. Much easier said than done, but if your education piece is robust, it's going to be very difficult to scale. You have to simplify the messaging and make it as simple as possible. Luckily, along the way, hibiscus over the last couple of years has really taken off. Just naturally, it's in the news, it's been on the web, and you know, Whole Foods just in general listed hibiscus as one of the trends. I forget which year. Was it last year, the year before? But the whole headline was hibiscus is happening. That's so awesome. That definitely helps a lot. That natural education, which goes into it, which you're seeing right now with the probiotic soda, stuff like that. But for the most part, you just have to make your messaging on the shelf as simple as possible.
I think that's really good advice too. And you know, it can be difficult with like, you know, with something like this. I mean, the benefits of hibiscus are pretty clear. I mean, people are starting to learn about it, and it sounds like it's something you can kind of get across. It's just like your general packaging. But some of these other things that, you know, people are very much looking for, like a lot of functionality out of their food. But some of these really new or novel ideas can be an even added challenge. And like a lot of folks will do, like, you know, QR codes in their packaging that go to like huge long articles and things like that, which, you know, for some people, I'm sure they're actually very interested and will actually go through with those things, but it can be very difficult to expect that of a consumer if that's like the main way that you're doing the education piece. It can be really difficult, but I think that's a great nuanced perspective to it, is just keep it simple. And, you know, if people become really interested, obviously you have resources on like your site, or if people really want to look into it, they can obviously find it. But I think from like a customer facing, especially on a shelf, I think that's actually perfect advice for something like what you're selling. So
absolutely. And yeah. Noah, our CEO and founder, he's done just an incredible job of taking a simple, somewhat boring idea of functionality, electrolyte, and creating a really fun environment around us. So if you go to our website, you'll see that there is a Rubyverse, and we've built a really strong community and a strong following of people who are members of the Rubyverse and really get along with it and have some fun with it. Because I mean, what's more boring than sparkling water, right? And we've tried to create a really fun thing around it and make it interesting and unique.
That's awesome, man. I mean, it really seems like you have. So that's awesome. Well, Zach, I just want to say thank you again for coming on. I just want to give you a quick opportunity as well, just to, you know, plug your website, your social media pages. Anybody might be listening, might be interested in getting in touch with you for maybe a potential business partnership, or, you know, just to see where they can find the product. They want to try it out. What's the best way to stay in touch with you all?
Yeah. So check out Ruby, www.ruby.fun. That's FUN. Learn a lot about us. See the Rubyverse. Check us out at any Whole Foods on the East Coast. That's New York down to Florida. And then me personally, you can see me on LinkedIn. I'm there as Zach Cohen, and post some stuff about CPG and the wide world of ops. So thanks for having me. This was a lot of fun, and yeah, really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, man. I really appreciate you being here, and I just want to wish you the best of luck and continued success for everything you guys are doing. I love the product. I love how knowledgeable you are, and obviously your passion for it. So I really appreciate you coming on, and I look forward to staying in touch.
Likewise.
Awesome. Thanks, Zach. Thanks, everybody.